first author, Akila Visvanathan, of the paper Shared Decision Making After Severe Stroke, How We Can Improve Patient and Family Involvement in Treatment Decisions, which has been published in the International Journal of Stroke.
I'm Akila Visvanathan. I'm a medicine of the elderly registrar at Edinburgh, and I'm currently a clinical academic fellow focusing on research that involves patients and families in treatment decisions after severe stroke.
What is the current evidence in various patient groups around family involvement in treatment decisions?
So thank you very much for asking me that question. It's absolutely a very pertinent question. And the truth is, there is actually very, very little research out there on involving families in treatment decisions that we make for patients. There are some studies in intensive care where families have been involved in difficult decisions, for example, extubation after a long and prolonged illness. But there isn't really any formal knowledge out there on how families make decisions for their loved one or their relative. Certainly after a severe stroke, there is a lot of challenges. And one of the main things is that quite a lot of our patients are too unwell to participate in decision making. So we often informally do rely on families in order to voice their preferences and make treatment decisions, obviously with the clinician, but at the same time, they are faced with having to know their relatives' preferences and what they think that they might want in the future.
So something very interesting that you mentioned in your paper was how people can change their mind through the process of disability. So before they become disabled through a stroke, they may have one sort of position, and then once they've become disabled, they have a different position. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So people who are well or who haven't had an illness or a disability seem to always express that death would be a better outcome than surviving with a severe disability, for example, not being able to walk or having to be in a home, being fed through tubes and not being able to recognize others. However, when you do ask patients who have survived with that severe disability, albeit this particular study I'm thinking of was a hemicraniectomy trial, which involved very few patients, they actually value their quality of life much more than we would have thought otherwise. But obviously, this is a small group of patients, and there needs to be further research in order to see if this indeed is a consistent view.
Then what does the process look like when making decisions for the family involvement in treatment decisions? What does it look like, and what is a gold standard of care? How should that play out in this particular setting when people are making these decisions for family members or close friends?
Shared decision making really is a dynamic process. So what it involves is a sharing of information between the clinician and other healthcare professionals who are treating the patient at that point in time, allowing the patients and families to express their preferences on what they would term an acceptable outcome or what treatment decisions would be acceptable to them in order to be able to achieve that outcome, and eventually together come with a treatment plan and a decision that would be most in keeping with their wishes. So that's what it should look like, and that is considered a gold standard of care. It is very in keeping with patient autonomy, which is obviously one of the main key ethical pillars. And the General Medical Council, which is a professional organization that clinicians all abide by, has always said that patients' wishes should be in the core of decisions that we make. Certainly in the last year or two, the Chief Medical Officer here in Scotland has brought out a couple of reports on realistic medicine. So it is to practice realistic medicine, which is to make sure that patients' preferences and values are assessed at each each and every stage of care. So it's basically a dynamic process between the patient's families and the clinician in order to make treatment decisions. However, how they actually then make these treatment decisions is largely unknown, and we do need more research into that. Because there are lots of factors that would influence decision-making and lots of barriers to shared decision-making that we need to be aware of in order to help this process along.
And taking a step back, why do families need to be involved in the decision-making? Why can't it just be the professional group that's treating the patient? Why do families need to have a say?
Again, that's an absolutely excellent question. We say that patients definitely obviously do need to be involved. It's their autonomy. Autonomy is obviously a key ethical pillar, and patients do need to know what they're signing up to, if you like. They need to know what treatment decisions are out there. They need to have the most accurate information and to be able to make these decisions, to know what's going to happen in the future. And prognosis is something that's key to all this. In terms of family involvement, it's much more informal. So it's just why families should be involved in, and I don't think that there is any sort of formal research out there or formal guidelines out there saying that families should indeed be involved, but patients do quite like the support of a family member being there when they have these discussions with clinicians and other healthcare professionals. Quite often, just informally from clinical experience, patients do like to bring their family member to these consultations, not only because there's a lot of information that gets passed on between the clinician and the patient, so the family member could take some of this information on board and also remind the patient what was being said, but also they get a better idea of what they need to prepare for in the future. And whilst I've been doing some interviews with patients and their relatives as part of my work at the moment, I do find that patients tend to say that they really do value family support and also family views on what could be most appropriate in the future.
Yeah, and is there a moral imperative, do you think, for hospitals to include families in the decision-making as well?
I do think there is, because it is very difficult for a clinician to make that decision on somebody that they've never met before. So having a discussion with the family about, especially if the patient's not able to have this discussion about what their wishes and views are, just goes back to the whole shared decision-making process, which you're not able to do with the patient, but then need some sort of information about their background and need some sort of information about what their wishes could be or what they've expressed in the past. So I wouldn't say, I think obligation might be a bit too strong a word, but I do think it's necessary.
So we've had a little bit of a discussion about some of the things that could be included in further research, but overall, what other things are there and how should research in this area proceed?
Absolutely. So we think that there is three main areas where we require further research. So the first is we need to understand a bit more about the factors that influence decision making, both in terms of patients and families. Secondly, we need to understand a bit more about barriers to shared decision making. Although we all know it's a gold standard centre of care, it is a very difficult thing to do because of the points that I touched along previously. And these barriers not only from the clinician and healthcare side, but also from the patients and the families. And thirdly, we need to understand how patients' values and preferences change over time. So what we need is a longitudinal qualitative study where patients or families are followed up over a period of 6 months or a year after a severe stroke to find out what their wishes and preferences are. Do they remain stable over time, or do they change? So these three areas really need to be looked into before we can implement changes along the way that could potentially enhance the shared decision-making process.
You've been listening to a podcast interview with Akhila Viswanathan from the University of Edinburgh Centre of Clinical Brain Sciences on shared decision-making after severe stroke. The International Journal of Stroke is the flagship publication of the World Stroke Organisation. And the World Stroke Organisation is the leading body in the fight against stroke globally. Please, we implore you, consider becoming a member and supporting this great organisation.